Okay, page 798. Last week began Parshas Shlach. We discussed a little bit about the Meraglim, but nowhere near finishing even as far as the overview to the story of the spies. Okay, but the Rabbeinu Bechaya, he gives, so to speak, an introduction to this whole concept of sending the spies, even though Hashem promised the Jewish people that he's going to conquer the land and bring the Jews into Eretz Yisrael. Nevertheless, as the Mefarshim explained, Rabbi Nebuchadnezzar says, you need to do things in the natural way. And he says, like a person is sick, yeah, you need to get ready, you need to go to a doctor. You need to have the proper medication. You need to have the proper food. You can't say, you know, God will heal, and that's it, and rely only on Hashem. Hashem doesn't want that a person should only rely on Hashem. The proper Jewish perspective is, we need to do everything natural, in the physical, natural way. At the same time, understanding that Hashem is the healer, not the doctor. The doctor is only the shliach. The medication is only the agent, the shliach of Hashem. But Hashem still wants, as the pasuk says, "Berach Hashem lekecho b'chol asher tasa." A person, Hashem's bracha will come into what something that somebody does. So therefore, he explains the general concept of this meraglim, basically, that even though Hashem says, I'm going to conquer the land. Nevertheless, the Jews and the Meraglim came and they said, listen, we want to send spies to check out the land. Moshe Rabbeinu agreed. As we explained last week, the shlichus, the job that Moshe Rabbeinu sent the spies on, was only to see how to conquer it, not if we could conquer it. This is a very fundamental difference. The spies came back, and this is the whole sin of the Meraglim. They said that we can't conquer it. That Moshe Rabbeinu never told them to do. Okay? And as we'll soon see, the various different expressions that we have, the Kli Yoker brings out in reference to the Meraglim, that you see there, what they had one intent, Hashem had a different intent, and the Jews had a third intent of what they exactly wanted with this story. But he explains it has to be in a way that it has to be done in a natural way. And therefore, Hashem didn't fight the fact that they wanted to send the Meraglim. Okay? Another point. So last week we discussed, like, were they tzaddikim? Weren't they tzaddikim? Were they righteous people? Weren't they righteous people? And last week we discussed that the sin of the Meraglim, as it's explained, there is different types of tzaddikim. There are tzaddikim that are, you know, for themselves, so to speak. They're not out there to change the world. They want to live a righteous life. They want to live a life of Torah mitzvahs. They want to do it for themselves. And that is one approach of a tzaddik. Another approach of a tzaddik is, no, that you have to go out into the world and you have to change the world and you have to better the world. And like we say in Aleinu, l'sakin olam b'malchus shin dalad yud, to fix the world, to make the world better in the kingdom of Hashem. In fact, in different languages it's called, in Russian, a peltz is a heavy fur coat. You know, the big Russian fur coats. So there's an expression about Noach, about other tzaddikim. They're a tzaddik in peltz. What does a tzaddik in peltz mean? A tzaddik that's only interested in keeping himself warm. Like Noach, the difference between Noach and Avram, we learned. Noach didn't go out into the world like Avram Avinu did. Noach was good for himself, he was a tzaddik, he built the teva, he didn't go out to better. If people came to him and they asked him, what's going on? He said, okay, you're coming to me, I'll explain to you. Hashem is going to bring a flood. So, you know, you have to do tshuva. But Avram Avinu, on the other hand, went out to the world. So you have this example, even just Noach and Avram. Noach was a tzaddik for himself, and Avram was a tzaddik for the world. So the Mefarshim explained the same thing is with the Meraglim, so to speak, versus Yeshua and Kalev. You know, because Yeshua and Kalev came back with positive reports that we could conquer, we could go in, and it's not a problem, it's no problem, we're going to do it. But the Meraglim, like we learned last week, what was the sin of the Meraglim? They didn't want to go into Eretz Yisrael. Why didn't they want to go into Eretz Yisrael? We discussed last week at great length, because in the Midbar, they had the man, they had the well, they had the clouds, all their physical necessities were taken care of. The only thing they had to do was sit and learn Torah. So he said, this is great. We're going to go into Eretz Yisrael, No more mud, no more well, no more clouds. We're going to have to start working for a living. When are we going to learn? Okay, this is what their basic problem was. And the Pasuk says, Hashem says to Moshe, Shlach lecha, meaning, you send. I'm not telling you to send. You want to send? Send. So also Rabbeinu Bechaya, now that we mentioned this briefly last week, the Mefarshim say, what does it mean, lecha? Whenever it says the word lecha, means, like Avraham Avinu, it says, lech lecha, go for you, Rashi says, for your benefit, for your good. Rashi says, here you're going to get money, and you're going to have children. And so when it says the word lecha, the Mefarshim point out, it means, basically, that you're going to benefit from it. What was the benefit of Moshe Rabbeinu sending the Meraglim? Like we discussed briefly last week, that Moshe Rabbeinu was not going to go into Eretz Yisrael. It's already decreed, okay, that Moshe Rabbeinu was not going into Eretz Yisrael. So if the Meraglim didn't happen, the Jews would have gone right away into Eretz Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu would have died right away. Right? The year going out of Egypt, the second year, would have died. Now Moshe Rabbeinu, because of the Meraglim, they came back. Because of that, the Jews stayed 40 years in the desert. So Moshe's life was extended 40 years. So the Rabbeinu Bechaya, the Mefarshim say, Shlach Lecha, means this is for your benefit, because Moshe Rabbeinu lived another 40 years because of the Meraglim. But we also find, and this also I'm saying as an introduction, because then when we learn the story of the Meraglim, everything will fit into place. Like we said last week, nothing makes sense of the Meraglim. They were good, they were bad. One minute they're good, one minute they're bad. Analyze it. Moshe Rabbeinu is davening for Yehoshua. Yeah? That Hashem should save him from the evil advice of the spies. So Moshe Rabbeinu knew they're going to be bad. And if yeah, why isn't he only davening for Yehoshua? Why isn't he davening for the rest of them? Kalev? He's only davening alone?
No.
Why is he only davening for Yeshua? Why doesn't Meshav, he's davening already, daven for all 12? I mean, like, all these things don't make sense in the story. Then we didn't get into this last week. We just asked the question last week that in the Haftarah Parsha Shlach, which is from the book of Yeshua, it speaks about the famous story of Yeshua sending spies to Yerichai. Moshe Rabbeinu is sending spies to Yerichai, and over there he sent two spies. Not 12, two. So the question is, why over here Moshe Rabbeinu sends 12 spies? And Yeshua sends two spies. By the way, it's interesting, the Pasuk, this Pasuk in Yeshua Perek Beis, second Perek of Yeshua, it doesn't say who the two spies were. It just says he sent Anoshim Meraglim. Who was it? Kalev and Pinchas. That's what the Medrash says. So over there he sent two spies, not 12. Over there, Yeshua had no problem sending him. The Meraglim came back tzaddikim. They went good. They came back good. Everything was fine. What's the difference between Moshe Rabbeinu spies and Yeshua spies? Moshe Rabbeinu spies were unsuccessful. Yeshua spies were successful. Like, what's the difference? What happened over here? So again, I'm going to say this is going to take time a little bit, but it's important as an introduction to the whole understanding of the story of the Meraglim. Obviously, a Jew, we believe and we know that everything in Torah is not only a story that happened then. Okay? It's not a story that happened 3,500 years ago. This is relevant. Every Jew is sending out spies, and every Jew has to conquer the land and spy out the land and check out the situation, and it's lecha, it's for your benefit. This is eternal Torah, you know, it's a living Torah. You need to understand that this is actually how a Jew has to live. So it says like this, there is, in the neshama of the Jew, we have the 10 powers of the neshama. There's intellect and midas. Okay, there's Chochma, Bina, and Das, which is the intellectual levels of the nefesh. And then there's the 7 emotional attributes. chesed, gvura, teferet, which is love, fear, glory, sovereignty, beauty. I mean, all the ten attributes that a neshama is composed of. In Kedusha, there's 10. And therefore, the pasuk says, ze lu'uma ze osa lekim. God made good opposite of evil. Because, as it's explained, in order for there to be free will, free choice, both sides need to be equal. Because in order to choose one from the next, it needs to be equal. If it's not equal, it's not called free choice. So if in Kedusha, there's 10 levels of Kedusha, then in evil, in Klipa, in Ra, there's also 10 levels. So if instead of using Yetzer Tov and Yetzer Hara, because Yetzer Tov and Yetzer Hara basically refer to the emotions of the godly soul. Like the Gemara says, there's two nefashes. There's Nefesh Olekis and Nefesh Abamis. There's a godly soul and there's the animal soul. The Yetzer Hara are the midas of the animal soul. Okay, just for definition purposes. So you have the godly soul and you have the animal soul. Okay? Now it says that before a person is born, when a person, before the neshama, comes down into the world, so the Gemara says, Mashbi and Eisei, we give it an oath, a vow, Tehi Tzadik V'Halti Rosh, is opening page of Tanya. The Gemara says in Nida, at the end of the third parak, that before the neshama comes into the world, the Gemara says, we give it a shvua, an oath. It should be a tzaddik and not be a rasha. So it says that what does it mean that we give the neshama shvua to be a tzaddik? And seemingly it's also redundant. It says, tihi tzaddik, be a tzaddik, va'al tihi rasha, and don't be a rasha. Right? That's what the Gemara says. It's an expression of the Gemara. Mashbi and Eisei, tihi tzaddik, va'al tihi rasha. Be a tzaddik and don't be a rasha. Now, if you're a tzaddik, you're automatically not a rasha. If you're not a rasha, you're automatically a tzaddik. So why does it say be a tzaddik and don't be a rasha? It's like redundant. It's repeating itself. So the explanation is like this. Okay, it's basically I'm talking now the first 14 chapters of Tanya. The definition, the true definition of a tzaddik, even though in the world's definition of a tzaddik, and it's based on Gemara, many places in the Gemara says this is the definition of a tzaddik. 75% mitzvahs, 25% sins, you're a tzaddik. 25% mitzvahs, 75% aveiros, you're a rasha. 50-50, the Gemara says you're a Beinoni. Okay? That's what the Gemara says. The Gemara in Brachas says there's a Tzaddik, there's a Rasha, and there's a Beinoni. Okay? Simply, the explanation of the Gemara is that if you do more mitzvahs than Aveiros, you're called a Tzaddik. If you do more Aveiros than a mitzvah, you're called a Rasha. And if you're 50-50, you're the Beinoni, the in-between guy. But the Gemara also says that that's not a true definition. The Gemara says, Tzadikim, the Gemara in Beracha says, Ein lohem yetzer hara, have no yetzer hara. And the Gemara quotes the pasuk by David HaMelech says in Tillim, Libi cholal b'kirbi. David HaMelech says in Tillim, my heart is hollow in me. That's what it means. So the quote, he didn't have a heart, he can't live without a heart. So the Gemara says, what does this mean? She'en lo yetzer hara, that he doesn't have a yetzer hara, because he killed it by fasting. Okay, that's what the Gemara says. David HaMelech was a tzaddik because he didn't have a yetzer hara. There is a higher level of a tzaddik. The higher level of a tzaddik, you just came in at the exact right time. I should have said God, and you should have walked in. That would have been even better. Yes. The higher level of a tzaddik is not only that he kills the Yetzer Hara, but but he actually transforms it to a Yetzer Tov. Like the Gemara says in Shema, V'yahavtas Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha, love Hashem with all your heart, but your heart is lipcha. What does it mean? Levavcha, with two bases. So the Gemara says, b'shnei yetzerecha, with both yetzers. Yetzer Tov and Yetzer Hara. So there's a level of a tzaddik, and this is the true, by the way, when the Gemara speaks about the not the adjective, descriptive name. When you say a person is a good person, nobody's perfect, right? But when we speak, the person's a good person, it means they do more good than bad. A person's a bad person, they do more bad than good. You know, average person is 50-50. But the true definition, as we see from Halacha and from the Gemara, if you do one sin, the Gemara says you're a Rasha. Until you do tshuva, you're a Rasha. You're possible to testify. You're not a kosher witness if you do one sin. In other words, the definition of a tzaddik and Rasha does not mean sinning or not sinning. The definition, the true definition of a tzaddik is one who kills his yetzer hara, or a higher level is makes the yetzer hara into a yetzer tov. Okay, that's the level of a tzaddik. You sin, that's the level of a rasha. Until you do tshuva, you're a rasha. What is a beinoni? Because how does a beinoni get into the picture? So the definition is like this. The beinoni, it says, is one that doesn't sin at all. Not in thought, not in speech, not in action. But he still has a yetzer hara. And because he has a yetzer hara, he cannot be a tzaddik. Because the definition of a tzaddik is one who kills the yetzer hara.
Or transformed. So he still has it.
No. If he transformed it, it's not a yetzer hara. The yetzer hara became transformed into a yetzer tov.
Okay, the beinoni can't transform.
No, a beinoni. Okay, listen, I'm explaining this only as far as the meraglim go. You could talk. It's not a tanya shir now, but I'm explaining the concept to understand why Moshe Rabbeinu was told by Hashem, I'm not telling you to do it, but if you want to do it, do it, and why he did it, and why Yeshua sent the spies, and it turned out to be good. Okay? The bottom line is, the definition of a tzaddik is one that kills the Yetzer Hara. The definition of a rasha is a you sin once. What's a beinoni? A beinoni is somebody who has the Yetzer Hara, but never sins, not in thought, not in speech, not in action. That's a beinoni. In other words, you can never sin in your life, not in thought, not in speech, not in action, yet you're not a tzaddik because you still have a yetzer hara. So beinoni really is a constant battle and struggle in life about not doing avedus. But the bottom line is, a beinoni by definition doesn't sin. A tzaddik also doesn't sin, but technically, a beinoni has a yetzer hara, and the rasha has a yetzer hara. So in level, the beinoni is closer to the rasha, but in practice, the beinoni is like the tzaddik, because he never sins. But level-wise, the beinoni has a yetzer hara, and the tzaddik has no yetzer hara. So he's not like a tzaddik. Now, therefore, for a person to conquer the yetzer hara, not every Jew could reach it. Not every Jew could be a tzaddik. And therefore the Gemara says, Barasa tzaddikim, Hashem Iyov says, you created tzaddikim. What do you mean, it's created tzaddikim? We have free choice. Right? They don't tell us whether they're going to be good or bad. That's up to us. But Hashem creates certain people with the ability to kill the Yetzer Hara. Not every person could do that. To be a beinoni, to control thought, speech, and action, every Jew could be a beinoni. How do we know that? Very simple. If Hashem gives us the mitzvahs, that means we could do it. Hashem is not going to give us mitzvahs we can't do. So if Hashem is giving us a mitzvah to control thought, speech, and action, that means we could do it. It's a battle, but we could do it. So every Jew could be a Beinoni, but not every Jew could be a Tzaddik. Okay? What is the definition of a Tzaddik? Killing your Yetzer Hara, killing the seven bad Midas that you have. That not every Jew could do. They can behave in thought, speech, and action, but they cannot necessarily kill the Yetzer Hara. This is the difference between Moshe Rabbeinu's Meraglim and Yehoshua's Meraglim. Okay? Without getting too Kabbalistic, Moshe Rabbeinu sent the spies to conquer Eretz Yisrael. What do the seven nations of Eretz Yisrael represent on a personal level? The seven bad midas of the Yetzer Hara, of the Nefesh HaBamis. Right? Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, listen, Shlach Lecha, I cannot command you to send spies to Eretz Yisrael to conquer it. Why not? Because the conquer... Ooh. Oh,
strange, huh?
Not you.
I know.
It must be Elul. Elul's coming in. It's not safe for you, no.
I think they were in Chicago.
Okay, anyway. So, Moshe Rabbeinu, when it comes to sending the spies into Eretz Yisrael, Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, I can't command you to do that. Because not every Jew could conquer their seven midas to make themselves a tzaddik. That not every Jew could do. Nevertheless, the Gemara says, Tihi tzaddik, you got to try to conquer the Yetzer Hara. You can't, necessarily, but you have to try. And this is where Moshe Rabbeinu is where it's coming, like we said before. If Hashem is not telling him to send, why is he sending? Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, I'm not telling you to send spies. You want to send spies, send spies. So why is Moshe Rabbeinu sending spies if Hashem says no? The answer is because Moshe Rabbeinu is doing what the Gemara says to do. To command a Jew to be a tzaddik, Hashem says, that is not feasible for every Jew. And if it's not feasible, I cannot command you to do it. Hashem can only command us to do something which is feasible. But we have to try. So Moshe Rabbeinu is told by Hashem, listen, Ani eina mitzavaloch. I am not commanding you to send spies to Eretz Yisrael to conquer, so to speak, the seven midas, because not every Jew can do that. But why is Moshe Rabbeinu doing it? Because Moshe Rabbeinu said, but Hashem wants us to try. Let's try. We won't necessarily be successful, but let's try at least to try to conquer, become a tzaddik. Yeshua spies is a whole different story. Without going into the whole Chassidus Kabbalistic thing of it is, Yerichai comes in the word Reach, which is smell, which refers to thought, speech, and action. The garments of the soul. Okay? Those are the garments of the soul. When it comes to Yerichai, that Yeshua sent the spies to, over there, when you're talking about thought, speech, and action, that every Jew is commanded to control, and therefore every Jew has the ability to control it, so over there, Yeshua says, I'm commanding you to go. And the spies came back successful. Because that was a feasibility to be the Beinoni, so to speak, to control thought, speech, and action, while to control the seven Midas, that's an impossibility. And this explains, as we said before, why Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, Shlach Lecha, you want to send, that's up to you. I am not commanding you to send. Why isn't Hashem commanding him to send? Because to conquer the seven nations, Hashem cannot command a Jew to kill his Yetzer Hara. Because not every Jew has that ability to do it. You have to try. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, okay, I'm going to try sending spies. It ended up to be pretty bad. The outcome didn't work out too well. But Yeshua is sending spies for Yerichai, which refers to thought, speech, and action. That is successful possibility a successful possibility by every single Jew.
Well, how do we know that this is false about speech and action, and the other one is 7 years old? Because in the land, they're still the same tribes.
The seven nations represent the seven midas.
Yeah, but okay,
Yirichai, in Kabbalah it says Yirichai comes with Reach, which is the Reach of the Levushim, which are the garments of the soul, which is thought to be the... Again, we're not going into that now. Mm-hmm. All I'm giving in an overview of the Meraglim story, besides what we discussed last week, is to understand this whole concept of what's going on here with the Meraglim, where Moshe Rabbeinu is sending, and Hashem says, I'm not telling you to send, right? And that whole thing of what they're all about. Okay, let's see this inside now a little bit. Okay, so he says like this. Rabbi Shem HaMeshel Eimer, Shlach Lucha Anoshim, send for yourself people. And again, simply it means that I'm not telling you to do it, you have to do it by yourself. Or like Rabbeinu Bechaya said, we just said before, it's for Meshe Rabbeinu's benefit, because the Jews kept another 40 years in the desert, so Meshe Rabbeinu was able to live another 40 years. Because Meshe Rabbeinu was going to pass away before the Jews went into Eretz Yisrael.
Lecha means order, it's not...
Shlach Lecha means...
They order it.
No, Shlach Lecha, Rashi says, means L'daitcha, it's up to you. You want to send, send. You don't want to send, don't send.
It's not ordered? No.
Now the Kleyoka says over here a very interesting thing. We find in reference to the Meraglim, we find three expressions in the Torah for spying. Hashem uses the word v'yasuru eseretz Kanan. Okay? In Chumash Dvarim, later on when the Torah speaks about the Meraglim, Moshe Rabbeinu says to the Jews, you came to us and said v'yachperu lanu. Also spy out the land, but he didn't use the word v'yasuru, he used the word v'yachperu lanu asaris. Okay, v'yachperu. And we know they're called Meraglim. Okay? They're called Meraglim. What's the difference? All three mean spying. Why is Hashem using the word v'yasuru? The Jews are using the word v'yachperu. And the Meraglim themselves are called Meraglim. So the Kalyoka says like this, very interesting. The word v'yasuru comes from the word yisrein, advantage, more, something better. Latur means, in English it means to go on a tour. Latur means to spy out the land, right? But there's also the word l'ragel in Chumash, and there's the word v'yachperu. So he said, the Kalyoka explains, why is the Torah using these three different expressions? Hashem uses the word v'yasuru, because Hashem is telling him, by sending the Meraglim, if it would work out good, it would come an advantage to the land. It would be a yisrein, it would be an advantage to the land. When the Jews said, v'yachperu lanu, v'yachperu is the same letters as cherpa. Let's find the negativity. Let's find the shame of the land. Let's find the evil of the land. Hashem says to the Jews, go find the good of the land. The Jews say, v'yachperu lanu, let's find the cherpa, the shame of the land. And then they became Meraglim. What does Meraglim mean? So the Mefarshim say, and the Pasuk, Selech rochil ba'amecha, don't become a peddler, rechilas, no gossip. So the Mefarshim explain, what is rechilas? It's a peddler that goes from place to place. So that's the word l'ragel, is a guy that goes a lot with gossip. What is a peddler? A peddler is you load on goods in one place, and you unload them in a different place. What does a gossiper do? Mm-hmm. A yenter. Loads up goods, lush and hard, in one place, in the ear, and he unloads it in the mouth to somebody else. So the Meraglim are called Meraglim because they went and spoke rechilus about the land. Hashem is telling Moshe Rabbeinu the Meraglim are supposed to bring out the good of the land. Like Kalev said, Teva ha'aretz ma'ed ma'ed, that the land is very good. And the Jews said, v'yachperu, let's find the negativity of the land. So these are why you have the three expressions corresponding with the three levels. Okay. What? Okay. And the Mepharshim explained, why did Moshe Rabbeinu send all 12? Why did he send 12? Yeshua sent 2. Nobody should complain that we weren't part of it. The only Shevet that didn't go was Levi, because Levi anyway had no chelek in Eretz Yisrael, so there was no purpose of sending a spy from Levi to figure out how the land's going to be conquered. Levi didn't have a chelek in Eretz Yisrael anyway. By Yishlach Esa Meisha Mimid by Pardon Al Pi Hashem, Meisha Rabbeinu sent them from the desert of Pardon based on Hashem, meaning Hashem agreed, this is the way the Mepharshim learned, Hashem agreed that he should send them. Kulam Anoshim, they were all prominent. Rashi B'nai Yisrael Hema, they were also all Choshevet Tzadikim, and like Rashi says, at that time they were kosher. There's an interesting Balaturim, the Gemara learns out from Psukim earlier in Chumash, that when you travel, you're supposed to travel during the day. Like it says, by Yosef with the brothers, well, not today, because today we go by planes and cars. When people traveled by foot, we learn out from Yosef and the brothers, when Yosef sent the brothers home, he says, in the morning he sent the brothers home. So if you look at the last letters, Vayishlach Eisem Moshe, okay, Vayishlach ends with a ches, Eisem is a mem, Moshe hey is the word chama, which means sun. So the Mepharshim explained, when did Moshe Rabbeinu send the Meraglim? In the morning when the sun was out. That's when you go on a trip. Ve'elish Meisam, these are the names of the people. Lamati Reuven Shamor ben Zakur, Lamati Shimon Shafet ben Choyre, Lamati Yehuda Kala ben Yefuna, Lamati Yisoch Yigal ben Yosef, Lamati Efraya Meshea ben Nun, Lamati Binyamin Palti ben Rafu, Lamati Zvulun Gadiel ben Sidi, these are all the names. And here's an interesting pasuk. Lamati Yosef, Lamati Menashe. For the tribe of Yosef, for the tribe of Menashe, Gadi ben Susi. We just got to saying, Lamati Ephraim is Shev ben Nun. It's also from Shevet Yosef. So why by Ephraim, Yeshua ben Nun, it doesn't say Lamati Yosef, Lamati Ephraim. And here, by Menashe, it says, Lamate Yosef, Lamate Menashe. So Rabbeinu B'chai again says a very simple, beautiful word. Because Yosef, the Pasuk says about Yosef, used to bring Dibas HaRoel Aviyam. Yosef would bring slander about the brothers to his father. Okay? So by Ephraim, Yeshua ben Nun, who didn't come back with bad news, so the Pasuk didn't want to associate him with Yosef directly. But Menashe, who came back as one of the 10 bad spies, right, so it says, over there it says, Mati Yosef, Mati Menashe. So he explains, because Yosef also brought Dibasim Ra'al Aviyam. So therefore, this way, by Yosef, by Menashe, he uses the word Yosef also. What?
Hashem, who really wanted to go, looks like he commanded them to go from this translation, even going so far.
Al Pi Hashem means two things. Number one, that he picked them, Al Pi Hashem, the Mepharshim say. That how did Moshe Rabbeinu choose these people?
Hashem is telling him the name.
Right. But again, Hashem says, if you want to send, these are the people you should send. I am not telling you to send. That's what the Rashi say. That's what the Pesukim say. If you want to send, these are the guys you need to send. I am not telling you to send. You want to send, but these are the people to send. And by the way, they were not in the seam of the tribes. They were not the leaders of the tribes. They were people of whatever, people of the tribes.
Good people.
At this time, they were good people.
Tzaddik.
Right now, they were tzaddikim. We'll soon see. Okay, Eile Shmeiso Anoshim Sheshalach Meisha La'aser Sa'aretz. These are the names of the people that Meisha Rabbeinu sent to spy out the land. VeYikra Meisha LeYishea Ben Nun Yehishua. And Meisha Rabbeinu called Yishea Ben Nun Yehishua. Okay, so now there's a number of issues just with this name. The pasuk seems to imply that what was his name now? Hosea ben Nun. Okay? And Moshe Rabbeinu changed his name to Yehoshua. So the Mefarshim ask, in Parshas Bishalach before, when Moshe Rabbeinu said to Yehoshua, go fight Amalek, over there they calls him, the Torah calls him Yehoshua already. By the ego, when Moshe Rabbeinu came down from the ego, the Torah says, Yeshua ben Nun Nar, lo yamish mitecha el. Yeshua was at the foot of the mountain for the 40 days. Moshe Rabbeinu was up there. So when, like, is his name Yeshua, or is his name Hashem? Which one is it? When was the name changed? So Moshe Mefarshim answered basically the same point, that his name was changed now. The Torah earlier called him the name that he was going to be called later. And that you have many times in Chumash that the Torah would use a word, a definition or a name, based on something that happens later. Based on something that happens later, the Torah calls him earlier. But the Torah is saying over here, when was his name changed? His name was changed now.
I have a question. These 10 people that Hashem picked up.
Yeah, 12.
12. Hashem knows the result before they send them.
Mm-hmm.
Why they pick this guy?
Hashem lets us go free choice. Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Not you. But when I sin, yeah, does Hashem allow me to sin?
So this is
I'm asking you. Does Hashem let me sin?
Hashem didn't pick you up for this job.
Hashem picked me for my mission. Hashem picked you for your job. Him, her, everybody was sent down by Hashem. Vayishlach. Anashlichas. Okay? What is the mission? By the way, I was going to get into this later. Shlach lecha anashim. Hashem sends down a neshama into the world for a mission. Not if we could be a religious Jew, how to be a religious Jew. Right? Like, okay. Then the mission is not to come back and say, oh, I can't be a religious Jew. That was the sin of the Meraglim. Right? Hashem says, I'm sending you down into the world to do a mission. Yeah? You could do it. Figure out how to do it.
Sorry.
How many times did we say, I always speak about this in Shul, yeah? We find an interesting phenomenon. Somebody in Steingedacht, God forbid, has to say Kaddish. They lose a parent, they have to say Kaddish. By hook or by crook, they come to Shul 3 times a day. Shachris, Mincha, Maariv, winter, summer, they come. 11 months, they come every day to say Kaddish. Yeah? Before that, they didn't show up. After that?
Maybe.
Usually not. Elul, okay, maybe. And that looks good. Yeah, they come. But not with the same excitement. Okay, they come, yeah. Okay. Now, the question is, you come over to them after the year. They came, mamash, 3 times a day for a whole year. You come to them and say, hey, why did you stop coming? I can't come. I can't come. That's what they answer. Right? I can't come. I'm business. I can't come. I can't have with a minion every day. So you say to them, I don't understand. 11 months, day in, day out, you're able to come to the minyan. All of a sudden, it changed. And after 120 years, when they lose the second parent, again they're going to come to show for 11 months. Yeah? So the question is, what changed? So let me tell you what changed. This is relevant to the story of the Meraglim. When a person has to say Kaddish, their attitude is, I must be in shul. That's a given. I have to be in shul. How? I'll figure it out. But if the attitude is, I have to be in shul, yeah? I have to come to learn, I have to, then the only question is how? That's what the story of the Meraglim. Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, we're conquering. Yeah? How? Figure out how to do it. I'm sending spies to figure out how to do it. When the year's up, there's no more I have to anymore. I'll try. When the attitude changes, so of course he can't do it. Okay? When a Jew is sent down into the world with a mission, the story of the Meraglim for you and me, you and I, speak correct English, is that we have a mission to accomplish. Okay? And Hashem says, what did Moshe Rabbeinu, what did Hashem tell him? Check out the land. Is it a big evil country? Is it hard to do mitzvahs? How are we going to do it? Not if we're going to do it, but how we're going to do it. Now, Hashem, believe it or not, allows us to sin. Hashem allows us to sin. When a person speaks something they shouldn't, who allowed that mouth to work?
God.
Without Hashem's power in the mouth, we can't talk, right? Sorry. If somebody, God forbid, eats treif, steals, does something, hits somebody, yeah? If I hit somebody, who gave him this power in the hand to hit? Hashem gave the power to hit. If Hashem didn't want me to hit, I wouldn't hit. So his question is, Hashem says don't hit. So if Hashem would be a proper boss, he wouldn't let me hit. Is that what Hashem does? No, he doesn't do that. Hashem lets me hit. Hashem lets me eat. Hashem lets me talk. Hashem lets me think. Hashem lets me do. Why? Because Hashem says, listen, man, you got free choice. You have free choice. And by the way, that's another interesting lesson from the Meraglim. It's brought down. In the same what we're talking now, Hashem does not want a Jew to be a robot. Automatic. Why? What did Hashem say to the Meraglim? I want you to figure out with your own brain how we're going to do it. That's what Hashem wants, right? What does Hashem tell the Meraglim? I want you guys to figure out how we're going to do it. Hashem could have told them, listen, today we're going here, tomorrow we're going here, tomorrow we're going here, that's the way we're conquering the land. It's not what Hashem said. Hashem said, send them on a mission. What was the mission? Very simply, figure out how to do it. I want you to use your own brain. I want you to make your own choices. You make the wrong choice, you'll suffer for it. You make the right choice, you'll be rewarded for it. So what does Hashem want? So you ask, why did Hashem pick these people if he knew they were going to sin? The answer is because Hashem gave him the free choice to do it or not to do it. That's what Hashem gives us. Hashem gives you and I the free choice to sin or not to sin, to do what's right or not to do what's right. We're not robots. Angels, malachim, are robots. And therefore there's no reward and punishment for malachim. Malachim are not rewarded or punished for what they do, because they're robots. And this destroyed the Meraglim also. There's a lot of lessons in life, by the way, that we learn mamish from the story of the Meraglim, because this is the mission of the neshama going into Eretz Yisrael to figure out how to conquer the world. How to do keep Torah mitzvahs. It's not for now, but we discussed in the past by different. Do you know how we learn out a minyan is 10 people? What's the source in Chumash that a minyan is 10 people? Because the spies, when they came back with negative report, Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, get away from this community, from this evil community. Kol Eida, yeah? So how many in the Eida? 10, because Yeshua and Kalev were good, right? So from the Meraglim, we learn out fundamental Judaism and fundamental Yiddishkeit that a minyan is 10 people. God couldn't have picked a better place to learn it from. We're going to mention when we get to those psukim, we'll discuss why a minyan is dafka learned from this. It's remarkable lessons, you know, of life. All in this Meraglim story. A minyan 10, we learn out from the Meraglim. The shlichus of a Jew going into Eretz Yisrael, not if we could, but how to be a religious Jew. That's the whole story of life. Check it out. Start one direction, go up, go around the whole life of the mission that a Jew has, and figure out how we're going to do it. Does Hashem give us the opportunity and the ability to choose evil? Yeah, that's why you see from the Meraglim. He picked them, 2 chose good, and 10 chose bad. This is exactly what Hashem wants.
So what is the mission of everybody in the world? Is not...
What's the mission of a Jew?
Well,
I mean, a Jew or non-Jew, what are you asking?
A general.
There is a mission of every creature that exists in the world has a mission of bringing out godliness. They have a mission.
Yeah. What is the mission? Mission is like your program.
To bring godliness into the world.
Yeah.
For a Jew, it's by doing mitzvahs. But for a Jew, it's by doing mitzvahs. For non-Jews, is to prepare the world for a Jew to be able to do mitzvahs.
So the way that you're going to capture your mission
is by doing the mission that God gave us.
Different ways.
Correct.
So this way is
some people
choice?
Do it this way. Yeah, that's our choice. How to do the mission is our choice. What the mission is, that's Hashem.
How do non-Jews prepare the world? They make it more civilized?
Sheva mitzvahs b'nei neach is to civilize the world. For a Jew to be able to bring Kedusha. That's why we're the chosen people officially.
Mm-hmm.
Some people, some guys say, we were chosen to be persecuted for all these years. But anyway, to suffer for all these years.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line is, to give a very simple analogy, you have a guy running a business, correct? The CEO of the company is running the business. In order for this business to run, he needs an organized desk. He needs a clean room. He needs, everybody, in order for a CEO to run a business, any business, you know how many people are working for this person to be able to run a business? Just think about it. All the people that made everything involved in the machinery that he needs for the business, okay? All the paper, you know how many people it took to plant the trees, cut the trees, make paper out of the trees and all that, okay? That is all basically for an eventual purpose for a guy that runs a business to run the business. Everybody has a very important mission. Right? But the ultimate is for a Jew, by doing mitzvahs, to bring Kedusha into the world. For a Jew to bring Kedusha into the world. The non-Jews are getting you can't function in the jungle. You can't function in the jungle. So the Goyim's mission in life is to prepare the world for the Jews to be able to bring the Kedusha into the world. Therefore, all the Sheva mitzvahs b'nei neach basically are all civilization mitzvahs. Set up a court system, do not be cruel to animals, steal, adultery, idolatry. That's basically all for the concept of civilizing the world. Animals have their purpose, plants have their purpose, inanimate, everything has their purpose in life. They all have their purpose in life. This is the mission that we have as Jews, to bring the Kedusha into the world. Do we always make it happen? It doesn't always happen. We have the free choice to make it or not to make it happen. That's what we have the free choice to do. The rest is up to us, whether we fulfill the mission or not. Now the Meraglim didn't, Yeshua and Kalev did. That's the whole story over here. What?
So the thing about that, or what is said about that all the Jews should eventually be in Israel.
When Mashiach comes, we're all going to be in Israel.
There's no commandment that we should dwell in Israel.
There is a mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Whether it applies today or not is a big machlekes in Poskim. It's a big argument in Poskim. Many opinions say it doesn't apply today. I'm talking Lushenim, not only Lachrim, Lushenim.
When did it apply?
When all the Yidden who lived in Eretz Yisrael.
Mm.
In the time of the Beis Hamikdash, then there was a mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael.
Mm-hmm.
Whether the mitzvah Yishuv, it's one of the Tayag mitzvahs, but Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Whether it applies now or not, it...
Some people say when Mashiach
comes. I said when Mashiach comes, we're all going to be back. And then the mitzvah is going to apply again. I know Rabbi Gorin, when he was chief rabbi of Israel, Rabbi Gorin was by the Rebbe, and he asked the Rebbe if you hold of Aliyah.
If what?
If the Rebbe holds of Aliyah or not. So the Rebbe answered, I hold the mitzvah Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Yes, Aliyah, the Rebbe answered Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. It went on until he finally saw that the Rebbe is basically not changing his answer, and he stopped asking. But the question whether that mitzvah applies today is a different story. Okay, anyway. So it said, V'yikra Meisha Yeshua ben Nun Yeshua, and he said, we're in the middle of this part, and we got sidetracked. Okay, Meisha called Hoshea ben Nun, he called him Yeshua. Now, the Medrash says, by the way, where did this yud come from? where did he get the yud from? So it says, when Sarai was changed to Sarah, there's two opinions, and the different opinions in the Medrash. One opinion in the Medrash says, Avram had an additional hay, and Sarah had a hay, instead of the yud. So Hashem took the yud, split it into two fives, he gave hay to Avram, and hay to Sarah. That's one opinion. Another opinion is, that Hashem took the yud from Sarai, and put it as the first letter of Yeshua. But it's basically, as Rashi says from the Medrash, that Ka, Yehoshua stands for Ka God, Hashiacha Miatzas Meraglim, that Hashem should save you from the spies. So the Klal Yoker, all the Mefarshim ask, so why didn't he daven for Kalev? A lot of the Mefarshim ask, why didn't he daven for Kalev or the others? So again, there's an explanation, which is like what we said before, really. Yeshua, we said there's two types of tzaddikim. Right? Tzaddikim for themselves. That was the Meraglim. The Meraglim, let's stay in the desert. Let's stay in the Midbar. We won't have to elevate the world. We're staying in the Midbar. We want to stay here. So they're a tzaddikim for themselves, which is a type of Avedah, Avedah of a tzaddik. Yeshua, Moshe Rabbeinu knew was going to be the next leader. As a leader, he can't lock himself up in a cab, in a ghetto and function like that. As a leader of the generation, he needs to function with the entire generation. So the atzas of the Meraglim was to lock themselves up in the ghetto, stay in the midbar, not have to deal with the world, and let's do everything for ourselves. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, okay, that's good for you guys. That's your Aveda. But Yeshua, the future leader of the Jewish people, he cannot lock himself up in the ghetto. He needs to go out and deal with everybody. So therefore, only for Yeshua he davened. And not for anybody else. Okay. V'yishloch ha'isameisha, Lasur says, Canaan, Moshe Rabbeinu sent them to spy out the land of Canaan. What did he say? V'yayma aleyem, he said, Aluza Banegev, go up in the south, or Valisa Mesar, and then you go up in the mountain. So Rashi explains in the Medrash, why did he tell him to go up in the south first? The south was the junkiest part of Eretz Yisrael. So when you want to spy a land, it's the last impression, the last impression that matters. So you don't want them to start with the good places and come back to the junk and come home. Because what's going to be in their mind? The junk. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, this is strategic. Go see the worst part of Eretz Yisrael first, then you go up to the best part of Eretz Yisrael, and then you come back with positive reports about Eretz Yisrael.
What was the Yeshua? What other guy?
Kalev. Kalev ben Yefuneh.
How come the Kalev told that you're not getting any advantage because he doesn't say anything?
He did. We're going to learn later. He went himself to Davin, to Marsa Machpelah. He went himself to Davin Marsa Machpelah. Kalev. Kalev was Moshe Rabbeinu's nephew. Grandson of Miriam.
Great nephew.
Huh?
Great
nephew. Chur. No, I'm sorry. Yeah, sorry. Kalev was Miriam's husband. Kalev was Moshe Rabbeinu's brother-in-law, what I'm saying. I'm thinking of Chur. Chur, Betzalel ben Uri ben Chur. Betzalel was Moshe Rabbeinu's great nephew. Kalev was married to Miriam. Kalev is Moshe Rabbeinu's brother-in-law. Moshe and Aaron's brother-in-law.
Their son was
Miriam husband.
Stoned in the time of the.
Yeah, they did whatever.
Their son, no? He died.
But it says, by the way, Kalev, when Kalev married Miriam, she was extremely sickly physically. She looked ugly. The Maron Seita discusses it. But he married her for her greatness, not for her looks. He married her L'Shem Shemayim. And then Hashem healed her, and she became actually stunningly beautiful, it said. But when he married her, when Kalev married Miriam, it was Mamish L'Shem Shemayim. She was sickly and whatever. Huh? No, she got tzaras in the when she spoke Lashon Hara. But it was a physical thing. The skin was discolored. I mean, whatever. It was. But he married her L'Shem Shemayim.
Why they call Kalev Kalev? Is it from
Kalev? No. Maybe it's Kalev.
Like the heart.
Like a heart. By the way, some of Foshim learn that why did Moshe Rabbeinu only daven for Yeshua? Listen to this, they write. Moshe Rabbeinu daven for Yeshua because you know Yeshua was so humble, he would be persuaded by the miraglim. Because he would be so humble, saying, oh, they're probably right. So he daven for Yeshua because he didn't want Yeshua to be influenced by the miraglim, and everybody else he really didn't care too much. But Kalev is not from the word Kalev. I mean, by the way, it says in Sfarim, the why is a dog called Kalev? It's from the word Kulalev. It's all heart. There's no Seichel. There's only Midas.
Yes, so,
but Kalev ben Yefuna was Shevet Yehuda. I mean, it was a, you know. It's a great, what?
Is this sweet, good heart? They have a good heart.
Who?
Dogs, they're faithful.
Dogs are very faithful because they have no seichel to stop it. Yeah. No, that's what it says. Yeah. You know when a guy gets very emotional? Yeah. Okay, somebody gets very emotional. What do you say? Cool it. Okay. What does cool it mean? They're going to put an ice cube on. Yeah. Cool it means your seichel should calm down the midas. Seichel controls midas. Why do kids get very crying quickly and happy? They're very emotional. Because they don't have the maturity of seichel to control the midas. So animal, like a kelev, because it has no seichel, so there's no concept of you before me or me before you, there's no seichel to rationalize, so they're very devoted. A person that has seichel will say, hey, you know, cool it, very nice, but I come first, I'm not going to risk myself for somebody else. Okay, to be continued.